Yes, it was a lie, but you wouldn't let it go. You said you were going to the same bar, too. How could I sit there alone? I had to go down to design and find someone. He was the one I knew would say yes.
You wouldn't have been sitting there alone. I would have been there.
It would have been me.
My mouth drops open, and he raises a hand to silence me. You think he's your friend, but he wants more from you. It's painfully obvious. Next time I see him, I'm going to explain a few things about you and me, just so he's clear.
Is that right? I think you should try explaining things to me first.
The entrance is there.
I pull up in front of the Port Worth Grand Hotel. It glows, opulent and gold, lawns groomed to perfection in the beam of our headlights. A parking valet signals to me, and I manage to put the car in park and slide out onto shaky legs, grabbing at my purse. I go to the trunk, but another hotel guy dressed like a toy soldier is already taking our bags out. Josh looks on with a bored, irritated expression. Thank you. I tip them both. Thank you so much. Josh goes to the reservations desk. The receptionist visibly flinches when blasted by his blue laser eyes. I turn a full circle in the lobby. Everything is in shades of red. Strawberry, ruby, blood, wine. A giant tapestry with a faded medieval scene hangs down one wall. A lion and a unicorn both kneel before a woman. A chandelier hangs above me from the center of an elaborately corniced ceiling. There is a spiral staircase above me, scrolling up about 4 floors in concentric circles. It's like being inside a heart.
It's something, huh? A man in a suit says to me from the bar nearby.
It's gorgeous. I have my hands clasped in front of me like a schoolgirl. I look for Josh, but I can't see him.
It looks even better from here at the bar, the suit guy says, gesturing me over. Nice try, Josh says sharply, joining me. He scoops an arm around me and walks me toward the elevator. I hear a laughed apology. Sorry, pal, behind us.
How many keys do you have in your hand?
He presses the elevator button, and he holds up a single swipe card like he's got the winning poker hand. Only a certain number of rooms were reserved for the wedding. I tried to get you your own room, but the entire hotel is booked. This is Patrick's idea of a joke.
I know when he's lying, and he's not. He's completely irritated.
I look over my shoulder at the receptionist, who is being comforted by his supervisor.
When we find our room, he takes 4 tries to get the swipe card into the door handle. I take 2 attempts to get past him when he holds the door open, but when I accidentally bump into him, every rounded girly part of me bumps across him like a ball in a pinball machine. Boob, hip, ass. Our bags are deposited. Josh tips. The door shuts, and we are alone.
Chapter 21. The way he lays the swipe card on the dresser to his left is slow and deliberate. I briefly feel fear. He's a huge, dark, shaking mass walking toward me. Atoms vibrating, blurring my vision as he steps to me and presses his toe against mine. The staring game has never before taken place in a locked hotel room. He releases the button on my coat with a snap of his fingers. The traitorous garment flips open, as if to say, "Help yourself, mister." He slides his hands inside, and his eyelashes droop a little when I arch into his touch. He anchors his fingers at the small of my back, fingers digging softly into my spine. Let's do this. I should write sonnets. I hook my hand into his belt and tug him toward the bed. He lowers me down carefully onto the edge of the mattress and cuffs my ankle with one hand. I can feel him shaking. He takes my shoes off and puts them beside the bed tidily. It's been forever since I last felt a man's skin against mine. For as long as I've known Josh, I've been celibate. I probably have some confusion in my eyes when I realize it. He sees it and strokes his finger under my chin. I was more angry at myself just now. He kneels down between my feet. A nice boy, kneeling beside his bed, about to say his prayers. His dark blue eyes are stubborn when he looks at me again. I am certain he's about to kiss my cheek and leave, so I hook one leg around his waist and tug him into the cradle of my thighs. A noise like, oof, falls out of his mouth, and I take his jaw in both of my hands and kiss him. Usually, he likes kissing soft. Tonight, I like kissing hard. I press his mouth open the moment our lips touch. He tries to slow me, but I won't let him. I nip at him until he pushes his hips against me. I feel a solid thud against me. If I ever thought I was an addict before, it was a vast understatement. I want to OD on him. By the end of this weekend, I'll be legless in a back alley, unable to say my own name. At least I understand this lust. I can deal with this, and frankly, it's the only outlet we've got. I am holding him with my legs and arms in an iron grip, and it's a surprise when I feel a dropping sensation. I open my eyes and realize he's standing up, taking me with him. "Are you going to kill me tonight?" he asks against my mouth, and I kiss him again, fiercely. "I'm going to try." My last boyfriend, the last man I had sex with forever ago, was only about 5'6". He could never have picked me up. He'd have ruptured a disc in his fragile, boy-sized spine. Josh sinks down onto a beautiful, wing-backed armchair I'd only dimly registered when we first came in. My whole life, before Josh, I'd scoffed at guys who made displays of their strength. But maybe a little part of me still exists who loves to be carried and coddled. My skirt has slid up so high he can probably see my underwear, but his eyes don't stray down. The word gentleman flashes through my mind. He raises a hand, and once upon a time, I would have flinched, but now I lean into his palm. "Slow down." I shake my head in disbelief, but he looks me in the eye. "Please." Doubt begins to spread through me. "Don't you want to?" He rolls his hips. The heavy, painfully hard proof is against me. He wants me so badly his eyes have gone their signature serial killer black. I press my eyebrow to his. We breathe against each other, lips barely touching. He wants to press his mouth against my skin. Bite. Eat. Devour. He wants me, hands and knees. Wet skin and cold air. Fingers sliding into me. His whispered words barely audible over my labored breathing. Tears of frustration and wet mascara marking a Rorschach pattern on the pillowcase. I already know what I'll get from him. Coaxing, tormenting, a darkly worded warning when I get too close. I'll be rolled into whatever position he feels like, bossy hands cupping, tilting, tightening, and gentling. But I also know he'll make me laugh, sigh. He'll tease me, chide my theatrics, make me smile even when I want to strangle him. My defiance will earn me a delay. My acquiescence, a kiss. It's what he is creating, of course. Delay. He wants to play with me until my orgasm hits me, hours after the first touch. He's going to make this little Easter egg last for days. Shard by shard, melting on his tongue. He wants to do it so many times that we lose count and probably die in the process. He wants to make sure I'm addicted to him. I know what I'll get from him in bed, all right. It's what I've always gotten from him. Every single pornographic image is flickering in my eyes because he's licking his lips and his eyes drop to the sheer lace at the tops of my stockings. He tries to speak but can't. I'm unbuttoning his shirt very clumsily, dragging each button through until I hear a thread snap. "Why do all colors make your skin so lovely? Even the horrendous mustard." I drop my mouth to his neck. "Beautiful man. Inhumanly pretty under fluorescence in the office." "Green. The color of envy. I've been a jealous psycho lately." "Mustard. the color of kernels. Let's burn it. Sure, Shortcake. You can burn my shirt. In a barrel. In an alleyway. He's laughing and then sighing against my throat, not making it remotely easy for me as I get as many shirt buttons open as I can. I slide my hands inside. You're like an anatomy poster under all this perfectly ironed business attire. I always suspected it. Clark Kent. Slow down. He takes both my hands out of his shirt. I struggle a little, but he holds me gently cuffed and tilts his face to mine. We begin kissing again, soft as silk, lighter than I could have believed was possible after my rough little paws mauled him so. His thumbs are pressing gently into my wrists, and I'm arched a little, breasts pressed into his chest as we kiss each other, achingly slowly. The wild impatience I was feeling has been checked a little, because maybe he's selling me on the concept of delay. You've rushed things in the past, I think, he tells me, as if reading my mind. What's your hurry? Being kissed by Josh, his lips tender and ripe, is a pleasure on par with sex. He's thinking of nothing but me and my reactions, learning what I like, withholding and giving, and talking to me wordlessly. When I open my eyes a fraction to take a peek, I see he's doing the same thing. My stomach bottoms out when he smiles against my lips. How you doing? He whispers, and I bite the words softly off his tongue. How would you say I'm doing? His hands fall away from my wrists tentatively. When he is satisfied I can be trusted to keep our lazy rhythm, he cups my ass and gives it a firm squeeze. You're doing great. Goddamn, Luce. You betcha. It's exhilarating, knowing I can now lay my mouth on him whenever I want. I look over his skin like a warlord, and he's my new territory. He shivers under my perusal. Let's play a special game, I tell him. It's called Who Comes First? Also known as Gold Medal, Silver Medal. We're laughing. I'm unbuttoning his cuff when his cell phone begins to ring. He ignores it, drawing my mouth back to his. My bottom lip is given a little pinch with his teeth. So pretty, he tells me. Just so pretty. The phone rings on and on. It stops and I let out a sigh of relief. Then it starts ringing again. He flicks his eyes to mine and I give him a frustrated shrug and climb off. I'll turn it off. He digs in his pocket, and I survey my handiwork. He's sprawled in the chair, legs everywhere, shirt unbuttoned, hair completely wrecked, eyes hazed and black. You look like a hot virginal dork who's been defiled in the backseat of my car. His eyes spark with amusement. That's how I feel. He unearths his cell and glances at it dismissively, but then looks at it again. It's my mom. Oh, shit. I forgot her. I go into the bathroom to hide. Shyness takes hold at the thought of meeting her. I'm not sure what to do next, and I listen to his placating tone through the door. I wash my hands and press my swollen lips and stare at myself in the mirror. I look like the porno version of myself. He speaks through the door. Luce? I'm sorry, but I have to go downstairs for a few minutes. I open the door. Is everything okay? Mom's downstairs. She made table centerpieces from her rose garden, apparently, but she can't find any hotel staff to help her carry them all in, and she's getting upset. Fucking hopeless. I need to go down there and kick someone's ass. He rebuttons his shirt. Of course. Go on. Make some young hotel worker cry. Do you want me to come and help? No, you're tired. Do you want me to order you any room service? Bring you back some coffee? No, it's okay. I might have a shower while you're gone. I'm sure I'll be draped seductively across the bed in something lacy for when you get back. He winces and adjusts his pants a little. He's so torn, I feel sorry for him. You can't leave her down there struggling. I don't know how long I'll be. Hopefully a few minutes. But relax. I'll be back soon. It's okay. There's no way I'm interested in making out with a guy who wouldn't go help his upset mom. Go. The bathroom is nearly the size of my bedroom. I shower and wash my face. When I'm brushing my teeth, I look at my face, pale and devoid of any makeup, and remind myself he's seen me like this. In fact, he's seen me even worse. He's seen me sweating, vomiting, feverish, and asleep. He's seen me angry, frustrated, scared, horny, lonely, heartsick. No matter how I look, it never seems to faze him. He always looks at me exactly the same way. Knowing this gives me the confidence to walk out in my Sleepy Saurus t-shirt and sleep shorts. It seemed like a funny idea at the time, but I catch a glimpse of myself in the dresser. I look about 10 years old. Oh well. Negligee Lucy would be a fake. Silence stretches on. I check my phone. Nothing. I push back the comforter and slide into the bed. I can't hold in the groan of relief. After the stress and tension of the last few days, this isn't as scary as I imagined it would be. The sheets quickly grow warm, and I paddle my tired feet in pleasure. I lean back against the pile of pillows and turn the TV on. I find a channel playing ER, and it is strangely comforting. Josh has probably seen this one. I try to watch for medical inaccuracies, but when my eyes become dry and tired, I close them. To calm my nerves, I hit play on my memory and bite back a yawn. I'm there again. The night I swallowed my goddamn pride and went to his apartment. My own personal happy place in my mind. I'm curled on his couch, the soft, deep cushions cradling my back. I feel the dipping weight of him sitting down beside me, and I know as long as he's there, I will be okay. I don't know how long we do this. I sit here holding hands with the most intensely fascinating man I've ever known. He's looking at me with fierce tenderness in his eyes. Eyes like he loves me. Now I know I must be dreaming. I wake when the sun slices through the center of my pillow, through a gap in the hotel drapes. My first thought is, no, I'm too comfortable. My second thought is, I finally get to see Josh asleep. Lying face to face with our pillows touching, we'd been playing the staring game all night with our eyes closed. Each eyelash curves against his cheek, glossed and dark. I'd kill for lashes like those, but they always seem to be lavished upon the most masculine of men. He's hugging my arm like a teddy bear. I don't hate him. Not even a bit. It's a disaster that I don't. I smooth my fingers over his brow and he frowns. I press away the crease. I prop up onto my elbow and see the bedside clock reads 12:42 p.m. I have to check several times. How did we sleep past noon? Our mutual exhaustion from the last few days has resulted in a pretty impressive sleep-in. Josh, no point sticking with the formality of his full name when we're asleep in the same bed. What time's the wedding? He jolts and opens his eyes. Hi. Hi. What time's the wedding? I try to slither out of bed, but he hugs my arm tighter. 2 p.m., but we have to get there earlier. It's getting close to 1, in the afternoon. He's a little shocked. I haven't slept this late since high school. We're going to be late. Regardless of this, he nudges my elbow like the kickstand of a bike, and I flop back down onto the mattress. I manage to glimpse some bare arm. He's wearing a black tank. Nice arms. I slide my hands down one, watching them undulate along each taut, defined curve. Then I do it again. He watches, and the next time I use my fingernails. Goosebumps. I bend my head to kiss them. You are something else, Joshua Templeman. I push his hair away from his forehead. It's ruffled and messy. I spend a few minutes grooming him. Am I trying too hard to seduce you? He rolls me closer. I never imagined Josh would be a cuddler. Well, you could always try harder. He's so sweet. Lying in bed with him is pretty luscious. Without thinking, I ask something I've always wanted to know. When was your last girlfriend? The question clangs like I've struck a gong. Well done, Lucy. Bring up other women while lying in bed with him. There's a long pause. So long, I think he's either asleep or about to explain he was married. He's too young. Surely. He tries again. Well, don't tell me you're waiting for your divorce to come through or something. His arm slides up the middle of my back, and my head rolls slowly onto his shoulder. I can barely keep my eyes open. I'm so comfortable. So warm. Surrounded by his scent and cotton sheets. No one would be masochistic enough to marry me. I'm a little indignant for him. Someone would. You're completely gorgeous. And you're neat. Tall and muscly and employed. And have a nice car. And perfect teeth. You're basically the opposite of most guys I've dated. So they've all been hideous, messy trolls. Unemployed and smaller than you. How could that even be possible? You've been reading my diary. The last guy I dated was so small he could wear my jeans. But he must have been nice. To be my opposite, he must have been so darn nice. He looks at the wall. He was, I guess. But you can be nice. You're being nice right now. I feel teeth on my collarbone, and I snort with amusement. Okay, you're never nice. The teeth are gone, and a soft kiss is pressed against the same spot. So when did you break up with this miniature man? He begins kissing my throat, lazily, with care and gentleness. When I tilt my head to let him have better access, I see the clock radio again. Real world, a clock is fast approaching. I wonder if I have a granola bar in my purse. It was in the couple of months prior to the B&G merger. It hadn't been working for a while. It was such a stressful time at work, and I didn't see him as much, and we agreed to take a break. The break never ended. That's a long time. Hence me dry humping you constantly. But you never answered me. Wait, don't tell me, I don't want to know. The thought of him pleasuring another woman is too much. Why not? Jealous, I groan, and he begins to laugh softly, but then sobers. He's painfully awkward when he finally explains. I was seeing someone, but we broke up in the first week of moving to the new B&G building. She ended it. B&G ruins another relationship. I want to bite my tongue, but the words won't stop. I bet she was tall. Yeah, pretty tall. He reaches to the side table and retrieves his watch. Blonde? He buckles it and doesn't look at me. Yes. God damn it, why are they always tall blondies? I bet she has brown eyes and a tan and her dad is a plastic surgeon. You've been reading my diary. He looks faintly disturbed. I press my face into his shoulder. I was guessing she's my polar opposite, too. She was. He lets out a wistful sigh and my heart twists. The territorial little cavewoman inside me appears at the entrance to her cave and scowls. She was just so nice. Ugh, nice, gross. And her eyes were brown. He watches me mull this over. Sounds like a legit reason to break it off. You know what? Your eyes are too blue. This just isn't going to work. I was hoping for a clever retort, but instead, his tone is withering. You've actually thought that this would work? Now it's my turn to say, I'm halfway recoiled into my own shell when he blows out a breath. Sorry, it came out wrong. I can't help being such a cynical asshole. This is not news to me. It's why I don't have a girlfriend. They all trade me in for nice guys. He looks at the ceiling with such deep regret in his eyes, I have an awful thought. He's pining for someone. Tall Blondie broke his heart when she moved on to someone less complicated. It would certainly explain his bias against nice guys. I try to think of how to ask him, but he looks at the clock. We'd better hurry. Chapter 22. Please give me a crash course on the key players in your family. Any taboo topics of conversation? I don't want to be asking your uncle where his wife is, only to find out she was murdered. I rummage around in my bag. Well, before last night, when I carried 45 individual flower displays into the hotel because they couldn't find her a fucking cart, I hadn't seen my mom in a few months. She calls me most Sundays to keep me up to date with the news of neighbors and friends I never cared about. She was a surgeon, mainly hearts and transplants, little kids and saintly types. She's going to love you, absolutely love you. I realize I'm pressing my hands over my own heart. I want her to love me. Oh, jeepers. She'll say she wants to keep you forever. Anyway, my dad is a cutter. I flinch. It's the nickname for surgeons. When you meet my dad, you'll understand why. He was mainly on call for emergency room surgeries. I'd hear all sorts of things over breakfast. Some idiot got a pool cue through the throat. Car crashes, fights, murders gone wrong. He was forever dealing with drunks with gravel rash, women with black eyes and broken ribs. Whatever it was, he fixed it. It's a hard job. Mom was a surgeon, too, but she was never a cutter. She cared about the person on her table. My dad dealt with the meat. Josh sits on the sill, lost in thought for a minute, and I search in my bag for clothes, giving him some privacy. I start swiping on makeup in the bathroom. After a few minutes, I peep through the gap in the door. In the reflection of the dresser, he's shirtless, gloriously so, and he's unzipped my garment bag. He holds the dress between two fingers with his head tilted in recognition. Then he rubs his hand over his face. I think I've made a mistake with my blue dress. My Thursday lunchtime dash to the tiny boutique near work seemed like a good idea at the time, but I should have worn something I already had. But it's too late now. He unfolds an ironing board and flaps his shirt over it. I slide the door open with my foot. Yowza. Which gym do you go to? All of them? It's the one in the bottom of the McBride building, a half a block away from work. And the one across from my building at night. You have two memberships? Lord, I barely use one. Too much energy. But they're the same chain, so one membership. One could never accuse Josh of being wasteful. I have to swallow a mouthful of drool. Are you sure we have to go to your brother's wedding? I have never seen so much of his skin, and it glows with health. Honey gold. Flawless. The deep lines of his collarbones and hips are an impressive frame. In between are a series of individual muscles, each representing a goal set and box ticked. Flat, square pectorals with rounded edges. The skin of his stomach pulls tight across the kind of muscles I usually stare at during Olympic swimming finals. He irons his shirt, and all the muscles move. His biceps and lower abdomen are ridged with those blatantly masculine veins. Those veins ride over muscle and tell you, I've earned this. His hips have ridges that point down toward his groin, obscured in suit pants. The amount of sacrifice and determination to simply maintain this is mind-boggling. It's so Josh. Why do you look like this? I sound like I'm about to go into cardiac arrest. Boredom. I'm not bored. Can't we stay here and I'll find something in the minibar to smear all over you? Whew, are those some horny eyes or what? He waggles the iron at me. Get finished in there. For a guy who looks like you, you're awfully bashful. He doesn't say anything for a bit, stroking the iron over the collar. I can see how much effort it is taking him to stand shirtless in front of me. Why are you self-conscious? I've dated some girls in the past. He trails off. My arms are crossed. My ears are about to start whistling with steam. What sort of girls? They've all... At some point, made it pretty clear my personality is not... It's not what? I'm just not great to be around. Even the iron is steaming in indignation. Someone wanted you only for your body? And they told you that?
Yeah.
He redoes one cuff. It should feel flattering, right?
At first I guess it did, but then it kept happening.
It really doesn't feel good to keep being told that I'm not relationship material. He bends over his shirt and analyzes it for creases. I finally understand the matchbox car code. Please see me. The real me. You know what I honestly think? You'd still be amazing, even if you looked like Mr. Bexley.
You've been drinking the Kool-Aid, Shortcake.
He's smiling a little as he keeps ironing. I'm almost shaking with the need to make him understand something that I don't fully know myself yet. All I know is it hurts me to think he feels bad about such a fundamental aspect of himself. I resolve to objectify him less and turn away until he puts on his shirt. It's Robin's Egg Blue. I love that color shirt. It matches what I'm going to wear, obviously. I cringe at my dress again. I go to my handbag and dig in it, finding my lipstick. Can I see something? He's got his tie flapping loose as he takes the tube from me and reads the bottom. Flamethrower. How appropriate. Do you want me to tone it down? I rattle my handbag, searching. I fucking love your red. He kisses my mouth before I start to apply. He watches me applying the lipstick, blotting, reapplying, and by the time I'm done, he looks like he's endured something. I can barely take it when you do that, he manages to say. Hair up or down? He looks pained. He gathers it up and says, up. He lets it fall and scoops it in his hands like snow. Down. Half up, half down it is. Quit fidgeting, you're making me nervous. Why don't you go and have a drink at the bar downstairs? Liquid courage. I can drive us to the church. Be down in, like, 15 minutes, okay? Once he's gone and the silence fills the hotel room like a swelling balloon, I sit on the end of the bed and look at myself. My hair falls around my shoulders, and my mouth is a little red heart. I look like I'm losing my mind. I strip down, put on my support underwear to smooth out any lumps, hook my stockings up, and look at my dress. I was going to buy something in a muted navy, something I could wear again, but when I saw the Robin's Egg Blue dress, I knew I had to have it. I couldn't have color-matched it better to his bedroom walls if I tried. The sales assistant had assured me it suited me perfectly, but the way Josh rubbed his hand over his face was like he'd realized he's dealing with a total psycho. It's undeniably true. I'm practically painting myself in his bedroom blue. I managed to zip myself up with some contortionist movements. I decide to take the huge sweeping spiral staircase down instead of the elevator. How many opportunities will I ever have? Life has started to feel like one big chance to make each new little memory. I walk in downward circles toward the gorgeous man in the suit and pale blue shirt at the bar. He raises his eyes, and the look in his eyes makes me so shy I can barely put one foot in front of the other. Psycho, psycho, I whisper to myself as I plant myself in front of him and rest my elbow on the bar. How you doing? I manage, but he only stares at me. I know, what a psycho, dressed in the same color as your bedroom walls. I self-consciously smooth down the dress. It's a retro prom dress style, the neckline dipping and the waist pulled tight. I catch a whiff of lunch being served in the hotel restaurant, and my stomach makes a pitiful little whimper. He shakes his head like I'm an idiot. You're beautiful. You're always beautiful. As the pleasure of those three words light up inside my chest, I remember my manners. Thank you for the roses. I never did say thank you, did I? I love them. I've never had flowers sent to me before. Lipstick red. Flamethrower red. I have never felt like such a piece of shit as I did then. I forgave you, remember? I step in between his knees and pick up his glass. I sniff. Wow, that's one strong Kool-Aid. I need it. He swallows it without a blink. I've never gotten flowers either. All these stupid women who don't know how to treat a man right. I'm still agitated about his earlier revelation. Sure, he's an argumentative, calculating, territorial asshole 40% of the time, but the other 60% is so filled with humor and sweetness and vulnerability. It seems I've drunk all the Kool-Aid. Ready? Let's go. We wait for the valet to bring the car. I look up at the sky. Well, they say rain on your wedding day is good luck. I press my hand on his jiggling knee after we drive a few minutes. Please relax. I don't get why this is a big deal. He won't reply. The little church is about 10 minutes from the hotel. The parking lot is filled with cold-looking women in pastels, hugging themselves and trying to wrangle male companions and children. I'm about to start hugging myself against the cold as well when he gathers me to his side and swoops inside, saying, "Hello, talk to you later," to several relatives who greet him in tones of surprise before flicking their eyes to me. "You're being so rude." I smile at everyone we pass and try to dig my heels in a little. His fingers smooth down the inside of my arm and he sighs. Front row. He tows me up the aisle. I'm a little cloud in the slipstream of a fighter jet. The organist is making some tentative practice chords, and it's probably Josh's expression that causes her to press several keys in a foghorn of fright. We approach the front pew. Josh's hand is now a vice on mine. "Hi." He sounds so bored I think he's worthy of an Oscar. "We're here." "Josh!" His mother, presumably, springs to her feet for a hug. His hands fall away from mine, and I watch his forearms link behind her. You've got to hand it to Josh. For a prickly pear, he commits completely to a hug. "Hi," he tells her, kissing her cheek. "You look nice." "Cutting it a bit close," the seated man on the pew comments, but I don't think Josh notices. Josh's mom is a little lady, fair hair, with a soft cheek dimple that I've always wished for. Her pale gray eyes are misty when she pulls back to look up at her huge, gorgeous son. "Oh, well," she beams at his compliment, and she glances to me. "Is this..." "Yes, this is Lucy Hutton. Lucy, this is my mother, Dr. Elaine Templeman." "Pleased to meet you, Dr. Templeman." She's roping me in for a hug before I can blink. "Elaine, please. It's Lucy at last," she says into my hair. She pulls back and studies me. "Josh, she's gorgeous. Very gorgeous." "Well, I'm going to keep you forever," she tells me, and I can't help but break into a dorky grin. The look Josh shoots me is like, "See?" He wipes his palms on his suit pants and almost has a crazy look in his eye. Maybe he has churchophobia. "I'm going to keep her in my pocket. What a doll. Come and sit up front with us here. This is Josh's father. Anthony, look at this little thing. Anthony, this is Lucy." "Nice to meet you," he replies gravely, and I blink in shock. It's Joshua on time delay. Still ridiculously handsome. He's a stately silver fox, gravely upholstered in heavy tailoring. We're the same height, and he's seated, so he must be an absolute giant when standing. Elaine puts her hand on the side of his neck, and when he looks up at her, the faintest smile catches at his lips. Then he swings his terrifying laser eyes to me. Genetics never cease to astonish me. "Nice to meet you," I return. We stare at each other. Perhaps I should try to charm him. It's an ancient reflex, and I press pause on it. I examine it. Then I decide against it. "Hello, Joshua," he says, redirecting his lasers. "Been a while." "Hi," Josh says, and snags me by my wrist, pulling me in to sit between himself and his mother. A buffer. I remind myself to admonish him for it later. Elaine steps between Anthony's feet and strokes his hair into a neater formation. Beauty tamed this particular beast. She sits down and I turn to her. You must be so excited. I met Patrick once, under less than pleasant circumstances. Oh, yes, Patrick told me on one of our Sunday phone calls. You were quite unwell, he said. Food poisoning? I think it was a virus, Josh says, taking my hand and stroking it like an obsessive sorcerer. And he shouldn't discuss her symptoms with other people. His mother watches him, looks at our joined hands and smiles. Well, whatever it was, I was completely steamrolled by it. He probably won't even recognize me today. I hope. I was grateful to your sons for getting me through it. Elaine glances at Anthony. I've brought Josh too close to the big elephant in the room. His lack of a stethoscope. The flowers are lovely. I point to the huge masses of pink lilies on the end of each pew. Elaine drops her voice to a whisper. Thank you for coming with him. This is hard for him. She shoots Josh a worried look. As mother of the groom, Elaine soon excuses herself to greet Mindy's parents and help several terrifyingly old people into their seats. The church is filling up, delighted cries of surprise and laughter filling the air as family and friends reunite. Frankly, I don't see what is so difficult about this situation. Everything seems fine. I can't see anything amiss. Anthony nods to people. Elaine kisses and hugs and lights up everyone she speaks to. I'm just a little lonely book in between two brooding bookends. Anthony is not the sort of man to appreciate small talk. I let father and son sit in silence on a polished plank of wood, and I hold Josh's hand, and I have no idea if I'm being remotely useful until he catches my eye. Thanks for being here, he says into my ear. It's already easier. I mull this over as Elaine takes her seat and the music starts to play. Patrick takes his place at the altar, casting a wry glance at his brother, his eyes skating over me as though assessing my recovery. He smiles at his parents and huffs out a breath. We all stand when Mindy arrives in a big pink marshmallow dress. It's insanely over the top, but she looks so happy as she walks down the aisle, simultaneously grinning and weeping like a lunatic. So I love it too. She takes her place in front of Patrick, and I get a good look at her. Holy moly, this woman is stunning. Go Patrick. Weddings always end up doing something weird to me. I feel myself getting emotional when their friends read special poems and the minister reflects on their commitment. I get choked up during their vows. I take the Kleenex offered by Elaine and dab at the corners of my eyes. I watch with suspense as the ring is slid onto each finger and sigh with relief when they fit perfectly and go on with ease. And when the magic words, "You may now kiss the bride," are uttered, I let out a happy sigh like I've seen the end scrolled over the top of this perfect movie freeze frame. I look at Elaine and we both let out identical delighted laughs and begin clapping. The men on either side of us sigh indulgently. They walk out down the aisle, wearing their brand new gold rings, and everyone stands up, talking and exclaiming until the strains of the ancient organ are almost drowned out. For the first time, I notice some speculative glances at Josh. What gives? They go for photographs down on the boardwalk. I hope the wind doesn't blow Mindy clean away, Elaine tells me, waving politely to someone. We'll all go to the hotel now, have some drinks, then an early dinner and speeches. We'll borrow Josh for some family photos at some point. Sounds good. Right, Josh? I squeeze his hand. He's been vacant for the last few minutes. With a jolt, he drops back into his body. Sure, let's go. I throw a look over my shoulder to his parents, which hopefully looks bemused rather than alarmed, as I'm hooked into his right arm and swept out of the church. Slow down. Josh, wait, my shoes. I'm barely able to keep up. He slides down horizontal in the passenger seat and lets out a groaning sigh. I'm having trouble trying to time my reverse. Everyone is piling out of the parking lot simultaneously. Do you want to go straight back, or do you want me to drive around for a bit? Drive around. All the way back home. Take the highway. I am an independent observer. I assure you it went pretty well.
You're right, I guess, he says heavily.
Pardon? Could you possibly repeat that in a moment so I can record it? I want it as my text message alert noise. Lucy Hutton, you're right. Teasing him will get him out of his little funk. He looks at me.
I could do the voicemail message, too, if you want. You've reached the voicemail of Lucy Hutton. She's too busy crying at a stranger's wedding to take your call right now, but leave a message.
Oh, shut up. I must watch too many movies. It was so romantic.
You're kind of cute.
Joshua Templeman thinks I'm kind of cute. Hell has officially frozen over.
We grin at each other. You must have cried for a reason. You're dreaming of your own wedding?
I look at him defensively. No, of course not. How lame. Plus, my fiancé is invisible, remember?
But why would a stranger's wedding make you cry, then?
Marriage is one of the last ancient rites of civilization, I guess. Everyone wants someone who loves them so much they'd wear a gold ring. You know, to show everyone else their heart is taken?
I'm not sure it's relevant these days.
I try to think of how to explain it. It's so completely primal. He's wearing my ring. He's mine. He'll never be yours.
The slow procession of traffic takes us all back to the hotel.
I hand the keys to the hotel valet, and Josh attempts to steer me to the side of the building.
Josh, no. Come on.
Let's go to the room. He's putting on the brakes. He weighs a ton.
You're being ridiculous. Explain what is going on with you.
It's stupid, he mutters. It's nothing.
Well, we're going in.
I take his hand firmly and march him through the doors held open for us. I take the deepest breath my lungs can manage and walk through an entire room half filled with Templemans. Chapter 23. In a pretty room adjoining the ballroom, we spend nearly 2 hours mingling in various states of awkwardness in an endless champagne reception. When I say mingling, I mean me carrying Joshua through a succession of social encounters with distant relatives while he stands beside me, watching me glug champagne to dull my nerves, which burns my empty stomach like gasoline. Every introduction goes like this. Lucy, this is my Aunt Yvonne, my mother's sister. Yvonne, Lucy Hutton. When his duty is completed, he begins occupying himself with stroking my inner arm, spreading his hand across my back to find the bare skin under my hair, or linking and unlinking our fingers. Always staring. He barely takes his eyes off me. He's probably amazed by my small talk ability. After a while, he is taken by his mother out into the side garden, and I watch through the window as he poses with various combinations of family. His smile is forced. When he catches me spying, I'm beckoned out, and he and I pose together in front of a charming rosebush. When the shutter clicks shut, the old version of me shakes her head, wondering how we ever got to this point. Me and Joshua Templeman, captured side by side in the same photograph, smiling. Every new development between us feels like an impossibility. He turns me and cups my chin in his palms, and I hear the photographer say, "Lovely." Another shutter click, and I forget the world in the instant his lips touch mine. I wish I could shake off my old mistrusts, but this all feels too much like a summer afternoon daydream. The sort I might have had once, and then hated myself for it. I watch Patrick and Mindy across the lawn, now clinched together romantically in front of another camera, and I realize that I'm clinched in a fairly romantic pose myself. The man who's hated me for so long is now showing me off, tugging me close to his side. When we go back inside, he kisses me on the temple. He drops his mouth down to my ear and tells me I'm beautiful. I'm turned another 90 degrees, presented to another set of relatives. He's showing me off. What I haven't worked out yet is why. In every introduction, After discussions on how lovely Mindy looked and how nice the ceremony was, the inevitable question always comes next. So, Lucy, how did you meet Josh? We met at work. Josh supplied the first time when the silence stretched too thin, so it becomes my default answer. Oh, and where do you work? Is the next question. None of his family has even the slightest idea where he works or what he does. They're awkward about it, like being a med school dropout is something to be deeply ashamed of. At least a publishing house sounds glamorous. It's so lovely seeing you with someone new, another great aunt tells him. She gives him a meaningful look. Perhaps he's also rumored to be gay. I excuse us and pull him aside behind a pillar. You have to make more of an effort. I'm exhausted. It's my turn to stand there and fill you up while you talk. A waiter passes and offers me another tiny canapé. He knows me by now because I've eaten at least 12. I'm his best customer. I'm obsessed with dinner, which I've been promised by the waiter is at 5 o'clock sharp. I watch the hands on Josh's watch, knowing I'll probably die of hunger before then. I can't think of anything to say. He notices a paintball bruise on my upper arm and begins silently fussing over it. Ask people about themselves. It usually works. I am acutely aware of how many people keep taking little peeks at us. You need to tell me why everyone's looking at me like I'm the Bride of Frankenstein. No offense, you big freak. I hate being asked about myself. I noticed. Nobody knows a flippin' thing about you. And you didn't answer my question. They're looking at me. Most of them haven't seen me since the big scandal. Is that why you want me to play girlfriend? So everyone forgets you're not a doctor. You'd do far better to hand out your business card. Quit touching me. I can't think straight. I tug my arm. I can't seem to stop now I've started. He gathers me closer and dips his mouth down to my ear. Are you this soft all over? What do you think? I want to know. His lips brush my earlobe, and I can't remember what we're talking about. Why are you acting so kissy and boyfriendy? I watch his eyes closely, and when he answers, I know with deep certainty that he is not telling me something. I've told you. You're my moral support. For what? What am I missing? My voice gets a little sharp, and some heads close to us turn. Josh, I feel like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. He strokes his hand down the side of my neck. I shiver so hard he sees it. When he bends to press a kiss against my lips, my eyelids drop shut, and there's nothing in the world but him. I want to exist only here, in the dark, the feel of his forearm in the small of my back. His lips telling me, Lucy, stop fretting. It's an unfair move. I open my eyes and a couple who I think are Mindy's parents are clearly talking about us. Both have busybody, speculative eyes as they inspect me. Quit trying to distract me. We need to get through dinner. And you're going to come up with some topics of conversation and talk to your family. Why are you being so shy? As soon as I say it, I understand. Oh, because you are shy. My new revelation gives me a slightly different angle to view him from. All this time I thought you were just an arrogant asshole. I mean, you are, but there's more to it. You're actually incredibly shy. He blinks, and I know I'm right on the money. A strange sensation stirs in my chest. It unfolds, grows twice as large, then again. It doesn't stop. It gets faster, bigger, feathers and fluff stuffing my chest like a cushion. I don't know what's happening, but it's filling up my throat, and I can't find any breath. He seems to know something is happening with me, but he doesn't press me on it. Instead, his arm rises to hug my shoulders, his other hand cradling my head. Again, I try to speak, but I can't. He just holds me, and I squeeze my hands uselessly on his lapels, and the red foyer in the far distance sparkles like a jewel. Josh, Elaine says. Oh, here you are. Her voice warms. Josh pivots without releasing me, sliding my shoes along the marble floor. Her eyes are a little too bright when she looks at us both. When you're ready, would you like to join us inside? You're at our table. I'll bring him right in. The unfolding in my chest crumples a little when I realize his mother is happy to see him with someone. I straighten up, and his hands slide to my lower back. People shuffle in to take their seats, and I see heads crane as they walk past to look at us. Who am I? I try one last time. Your housekeeper? Your piano teacher? Your shortcake, he says simply. You don't need to make up anything. Come on. Let's get this over with. I feel some trepidation as I approach our table, and Josh stiffens up. We ease into our chairs and spend a few minutes studying the table decorations and our name cards. The others are typed, but mine is handwritten. I'm guessing due to the late RSVP. The table seats 8. Me, Josh, his mom and dad, Mindy's parents, and Mindy's brother and sister. I'm at the head family table. If I had known this would happen when I brashly offered my services as Josh's chauffeur, I would have punched myself in the face. I chat a little to Mindy's brother, seated to my left. Glasses are clinked. I'm praying Josh will tell me something. Anything. I'm about to aim a little jab at the side of his thigh when the silence is broken by Elaine. The dreaded question. Lucy, tell everyone how you met Josh. Inwardly, I shriek. I've answered this question at least 8 times today, and it never gets any easier. Oh, crap. I'm sounding like a priced-by-the-hour escort who hasn't thought of a good enough lie. What did we agree again? I'm shortcake? I can't tell them that. If I ever was going to humiliate Josh, now would be the time. I can almost imagine saying it. He forced me to come. We work together, Josh says calmly, ripping his dinner roll in half. We met at work. An office romance, Elaine says, winking at Anthony. The best kind. What did you think of him when you first laid eyes on him? I know a born romantic when I see one. She's a mother who will take any compliment of her offspring as a compliment to herself. She's looking at him now with her heart in her eyes, and I cannot help falling a bit in love with her myself. I thought, good grief, he's tall. Everyone except Anthony laughs. He's studying his fork, checking for cleanliness. How tall are you, Lucy? Mindy's mother, Diane, asks. Yet another dreaded question. 5 whole feet. My standard answer that always gets a laugh. Waitstaff are beginning to pass out the starters, and my stomach makes a hungry gurgle. And what did you think when you saw Lucy? Elaine prompts. We may as well be sitting in the middle of the table like decorative centerpieces. This is getting ridiculous. I thought she had the best smile I'd ever seen. Josh replies, matter of fact. Diane and Elaine both look at each other and bite their lips, eyes widening, eyebrows rising. I know that look. It's the hopeful mom look. But even I can't stop myself from blurting, did you? If he's lying, he's absolutely outdoing himself. I know his face better than my own, and I can't pick it. He nods and gestures at my plate. I learn that Patrick and Mindy are going to Hawaii for their honeymoon. I've always wanted to go there. I need some sun. A vacation sounds good right about now. I push away my plate, which I've practically licked clean, and remember that a trip to Sky Diamond Strawberries is on the near horizon. I start to tell Josh because he's so fascinated with that place, but his mother interrupts. Is work busy? Elaine asks. I nod. So busy. And Josh is just as busy. I notice Anthony make a little snort, looking away dismissively. Boy, is that expression familiar. Josh goes rigid, and Elaine gives her husband a frown. The main courses are served, and I begin dismantling it with gusto. Tiny hairline cracks of tension are starting to run through the meal. I must be incredibly slow, but I can't work out the source of it.